You're listening to the actual longest-running sports talk show in Tuscaloosa, and
if you want to know the truth about it, pisses me off when I talk to people
that say otherwise. This is the student section on 90.7 The Capstone.
Little life on the farm is kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy like me can't have. Thoroughly to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. Days are all filled with an easy country charm. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but
good evening and welcome into the student section here on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Zach Tiger, joined today by Eric Evenson and Marquise Munson. And Marquise, I think you finally found your groove with playing the country music, man. Keep this coming.
No, I did not find that song, man. I don't even know why you just suggested that to these viewers, man.
Listeners, they aren't viewing us. I was corrected earlier for saying viewers in a meeting. But, man, this is good stuff. I'm going to have to keep giving you recommendations.
You're going to have to, but I got Brooks behind me, so I don't need you, because he knows
that's
way
true.
More country than
that's
you
true.
Do.
Brooks is able to... he'll tell you. He'll give
you
a whole playlist going.
You would know.
He'll give you a whole playlist going.
CMT Music Awards in his house, man.
We're going to come at you today with some coverage of the LSU Tigers as we continue our countdown to SEC Media Days, those being in just 2 weeks before Caleb and I head up to Hoover for a week and bring you all the coverage that your little heart will desire here on WVUA-FM. Wednesday, July 15th, we'll be going live when Alabama head coach and selected players Nick Saban, he'll be talking to us, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a grand time. I know Caleb is as well. But in the meantime, today, before we get into our LSU Tiger talk, let's talk a little bit about the NBA. Interesting report today, Marquise. I'm glad you're with us here to talk about it. Apparently, the Sacramento Kings have been probing John Calipari to see if he's interested in taking over their head coaching job and their front office duties. Did you see the story?
Yeah, I saw that story. See, here's the thing with that. Calipari's not going anywhere. I don't care how much you offer him. I think they offered him $8 million, and also he wants a little bit, like 8% ownership in the Sacramento Kings, which is like, I mean, it's not a lot, really. But I don't see it happening. Calipari's not leaving, and they offered him, you know, front office, ownership, whatever the case may be. He's not going to leave, so I don't know why they keep offering him, but they just need to find another coach. I mean, but the fact of the matter is, George Karl is going to get fired. That's just the end-all to be-all. He's going to get fired. But it's just a matter of them finding another coach, and Coach Cal's not that coach.
See, I think what they would have to do to get Calipari there is have actually give him a key to the city and, you know, make him the mayor instead of was it Kevin Johnson? I think it's the mayor of Sacramento, former Kings player. Give him the mayor's rights. Give him the governor's mansion or something. Make Calipari the governor of California.
To do with the Sacramento Kings, and then they'd actually have to get him some talent too. That's that'd probably be important.
Well, see, if you look at the Kings roster. I mean, there's some talent on that roster without a doubt. I mean, and there's no question they want Calipari there because he has, you know, two Kentucky players on that roster now. They just drafted Willie Cauley Stein and obviously DeMarcus Cousins on that team already. It would just be like, you know, it'd be Kentucky 2.0.
And also a kind of Kentucky side note, they're trying to get Rondo for some reason. I don't know why, but, I mean, Rudy Gay is trying to recruit, quote-unquote, Rondo. Don't think that's going to work out because Rondo's not really valuable. He's probably maybe the sixth best point guard in this free agency class, so...
Well, the Kings are like the, you know, 31st best team in the NBA, so having the sixth best point guard in the free agency.
I mean, not when you're playing with the number almost one of the number one centers in the league, though. DeMarcus Cousins is probably going to be the number one center in the league, if he's not already. He's at least number two.
What do you average, 25 and 13 this year?
Exactly. He's at least number two behind Anthony Davis, depending on what position you want to put him, center or power forward, but... Behind him is DeMarcus Cousins. He's been dominant ever since he's been with the Sacramento Kings. So, I mean, I would understand you trying to find a point guard to play with him, but Rondo is just not that point guard.
Well, I don't know. I feel like the Kings definitely need to make a big splash in free agency if they want to contend, because at this point, looking at their roster, they are, you know, they could make a, you know, a push for a lower rung playoff seed. And obviously with the scrutiny going on right now with Coach Carl in the front office and DeMarcus Cousins, just a mess, and that's only going to spell failure for your franchise going forward. And Coach Cal would without a doubt be the answer, but he'd be an answer for pretty much any NBA yeah. franchise. But it was just interesting when I saw that report, because it was reported earlier the Pelicans are interested in Cal Perry reuniting him with Anthony Davis, and you know, that was kind of quickly dismissed. But when you look at this Kings roster and the Kings situation, really the only coach that would come to mind that could get along with DeMarcus Cousins would be Coach Cal. DeMarcus Cousins is not an easy guy to get along with. He's had problems with every head coach he's played for, really, except for Cal Perry. And so, you know, that was kind of an interesting situation. When I first saw that story this morning, I thought, well, you know, that, you know, I don't think Cal's going anywhere. I think he's staying with Kentucky, because whatever any NBA team offers him, Kentucky can match.
Yeah.
They'll give him part ownership of the university, you know, to get him not to leave, if that's what they have to do. That's what they want to do. He's, you know, he's the most elite coach, maybe besides Coach K, in college basketball. They don't want to let him go. But if he were to make the jump to the NBA, I mean, the Sacramento Kings would be an ideal landing spot for him.
But once again, it's a difference between college coaches and actually going to a professional, because Kyle Murray did coach before in the NBA, and that was a travesty. And he kind of found his niche in college basketball, because, you know, kind of similar to Nick Saban, because he controls the recruiting process. He controls who's on his team and who's not on his team. It's not a lot of budget, you know, stuff that he has to worry about. All he has to worry about is recruiting and coaching. And that's why he loves the college level more so than the NBA level.
Well, again, with the Sacramento reported offer, I believe they called it a probe. They're probing his interest. They would also give him, obviously, you know, front office control, which in a sense is you can liken it to recruiting as far as free agency goes. You can go out, make your pitch to get the guy there. And so giving him that front office control might make it more appealing. But again, I agree with you, Marquise. I don't think he's leaving Kentucky.
Yeah, I don't either. I think you'd have to offer him basically ownership, GM, coaching. Mayor. Yeah, mayor.
Governor of California, which I would accept. Get rid of Jerry Brown. But
I mean, they've had actors before as their governor, so I think having – basketball coach would be about the same.
Did you have to go there, man?
That state's a mess.
Did you really have to go there, though? It was because of the Terminator movie coming out. Did you have to mention that?
Reminded me.
The only thing that's more of a mess in the Kings front office and basketball situation is the state of California's political situation, but this is a sports show.
The Kings got Shaq and Lottie Divac in the office. I mean, that's not too bad. Sanders playing, you know, actually being in that front office.
It's just the whole beef that goes on. It's not necessarily the clout of the names, but it's just there's too much hatred going on there, and it's just not enough trust. You, as an owner, you got to trust your coach, and vice versa. And right now, you don't have that. And Coach Carl's had that in the past. People have always called him a snake in the grass.
I think they should hire Shaq as their coach.
I think they should hire
him. He'll be the slowest coach.
Put him on the sideline.
Because he's not going to run the sidelines for a foul call. He's just going to stand there, probably just point. But, I mean, I don't know. Shaq is one of those players, because usually great players don't turn out to be great coaches. They usually be kind of like the guys that played the sideline. Kind of the guy that cleaned Shaq's shoes is probably Coach of the Year one day.
I mean, Wayne
in the near future.
Was one of the worst coaches in the history of the NHL, but he's the greatest player in the history of the NHL, so... Yeah,
exactly.
I got a question for you, Marquise, before we switch over to some hockey news. I know Eric will want to talk about that before we get into our Tiger talk in the next segment. But where do you see LaMarcus Aldridge landing? Apparently the Spurs were really interested in him.
I'll put it this way. If you want to get the money and possibly win, he would go to L.A. If he wants to kind of take a low pay cut but win a championship, he can go to soccer, or he can go to the Spurs. So I kind of see it just all depends on the right situation for him. And it all depends on when Tim Duncan retires as well, because I know he's not going to want to play under Tim Duncan for the next 2 years. And that's the same thing with Kobe Bryant. Like, that's the reason why people don't want to come to L.A. is because they don't want to be in Kobe's shadow for the next 2-3 years. So people always ask that question, that when's Kobe retiring? And I know Kobe's trying to recruit DeAndre Jordan, too, and I was just like, please don't. don't recruit anybody. Just enjoy your vacation. Kick it with your lovely wife and your two beautiful kids. And just call it a day, man. Just don't do any recruiting process whatsoever. And that's kind of going to be the... He's leaning towards L.A. I would love to see him play in L.A., but San Antonio, in my mind, is the best choice for him if he wants to win a championship. But if he wants to get his money and quite possibly get a 5-6 seed in the West, then he can go to L.A.
All right. Well, thanks for your input. That answers my question. I mean, he's been buzzing around all over my Twitter feed today. Marcus Aldridge going here.
If he really
he's
wants to win a championship, he'll go to Atlanta.
You and your Hawks, man. You're a diehard. I love it.
Sorry, Brooks, but I don't think that's happening.
But talk to us about the hockey news. Obviously, free agency kicking off, and we had a big trade today, a couple big trades today.
Yep, the biggest trade of the day was Brandon Saad, who was a big piece in the Chicago Blackhawks Cup run this year, was traded to...
Half their fans don't know him, though.
Yeah, half their fans probably don't know him. But he was traded to the Columbus Blue Jackets today for... Artem Anisimov and a couple of a few young players and a fourth round pick. And this all stemmed from, I talked about it a few weeks ago after the Hawks won the cup, and I said that they were going to have trouble signing him because they had a lot of money tied up in their other players, and it turns out they couldn't trade Patrick Sharp, or haven't been able to trade him yet, haven't really gotten that much money off the books. And Brandon Saad wanted about $6.5 million over about the next 6 years. They didn't want to commit that money to him, so they shipped him off to Columbus, who will probably – he's a restricted free agent, so if somebody puts in an offer for him, they can match it. So they'll probably get a contract done there. But, yeah, Brandon Saad is on Columbus now, and
– third leading goal scorer, too, for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and, they didn't get very much because there wasn't much leverage there. You couldn't get – a whole bunch from him when everyone knows you're not going to be able to sign the guy. So they got as much as they could, but it really hurt him. I don't think they handled the situation right this offseason because they weren't able to get rid of Patrick Sharp. They're asking way too much for him. They still haven't been able to get rid of him. And that would clear about $5 or $6 million off their books to get the deal with Saad done, but they weren't able to do that. So I think they mishandled that situation.
And then, of course, the San Jose Sharks found their answer in goal.
Yeah, they did.
Hopefully, quite a talented goalie in Martin. And it's the last place that the L.A. Kings wanted him to go. They shipped him to Boston to get him out of the conference, out of the West. And then Boston goes and turns around and trades him to San Jose. Not only will L.A. have to face him in conference play, they have to face him in division play, which is even worse.
Exactly.
So, I'm happy because I can't stand L.A.
He's played behind Jonathan Quick, so not many people know about him. But, I mean, he's a really good goalie. He's a good prospect. He's a young kid. And he'll get every chance to start there San Jose.
Miami signed with the Dallas Stars. So
he'll get every chance there. And this might have been the one good trade that Boston has made all offseason. They got a first-round pick for him and a prospect. That might have been the only good trade they've made this offseason. But they didn't need him. They already have Tuukka Rask there and PK Subban's little brother, who's a good prospect at goalie. So they got a good deal for him, and the San Jose Sharks probably got their goaltender of the future.
Oh, which is great because we haven't had consistent goaltending in San Jose since Nabokov left.
Yeah,
and it's been a mess. Niemi just never was his Chicago self. He had one breakout year in Chicago, signed a big contract with San Jose. Never really panned out. Not consistent. He wasn't a bad goalie, just inconsistent. And I read Martin has a .921 save percentage with 5,000 shots faced in the AHL. So, again, pretty experienced guy. He played a limited action behind Jonathan Quick, like you mentioned, and definitely impressed enough people. And obviously LA knows how good he is if they didn't want him in their division, and they were very vocal about not wanting him in the Western Conference, and he's back and he's in San Jose. So hopefully it'll pay off and San Jose can start beating LA a little more. And
I can just imagine San Jose this whole time, man, we can get that guy and stick it to the Kings.
I have a feeling that San Jose and Boston just have like a connection because remember the Joe Thornton trade, he came over from the Bruins, and I think this entire time they were scheming, all right, we'll give you your first-round pick. If you somehow acquire this goalie, we'll screw the Kings together because nobody likes the LA Kings. But that's enough hockey and basketball talk. We're going to head to break. And when we come back, we're going to start our LSU preview talking about the Tigers offense. So stick around. You don't want to miss that. You're listening to the Student Section right here on 90.7 The Capstone.
I'm former Alabama quarterback Greg McElroy, and you're listening to the student section on 90.7 The Capstone.
I perform for our high school choir director, who taught me to breathe from the diaphragm and sing from the heart.
Speech, debate, theater, music. The performing arts teach valuable life lessons that typically aren't taught in the classroom. They help high school students learn leadership skills that prepare them to enjoy more satisfying, productive lives.
Hey, I've got a question for you. Who will you perform for?
This message presented by the Alabama High School Athletic Association and the high school in your community.
Here at WVUA-FM, we're always shooting for clear communication.
Well, I don't get the rain and cold. But
this is the student section on 90.7 The Capstone.
A little bit of guitar. A little bit of truck, a little bit of hound dog, and a little bit of luck. A little bit of bacon, a little bit of beans, a little bit of you loving up on me. A little bit of how it's supposed to be, a little bit of life. A little bit of backseat, a little bit of burn. A little bit of radio, I'm going boom, boom.
Welcome back into the student section here on 90.7 The Capstone. Zach Tigard, Eric Evenson, and Marquise Munson with you here on this Tuesday evening. Some pretty strong storms coming through this morning. I don't know, were you awake for those at all?
I was not.
I woke up and I thought I was early for work because it was so pitch black out. But it passed after quite a heavy downpour, but nonetheless. And again, Marquise, I'm assuming Brooks helped you with this song selection.
Nah, this is all me, dog.
I can tell without a doubt. Let's talk about LSU now. LSU, again, a team. I mean, it's the same storyline every year. Every week or every day, I should say, we come on air. Every team has a big question mark. LSU's is undoubtedly at quarterback. Last year, there was a lot of instability at quarterback, and that's what led them to an 8-4 record last year. Just underwhelming season. Some thought Les Miles may or may not be on his way out, and turns out he wasn't. He's still in Baton Rouge, a very good head coach, 103-29 in 10 years at the school down there. And it was off and on between Brandon Harris and Anthony Jennings, excuse me, and neither one really separated themselves from each other. And the biggest separation, I think, came just a few days ago when Jennings was arrested. Now you have to wonder, did Brandon Harris kind of earn his spot with Jennings' arrest?
I mean, I don't know if he earned it, but I think he definitely stepped ahead a little bit there. I mean, they were pretty even all year last year. And I think that this will probably push Harris above Jennings. We don't really know all that much about the whole arrest and the backstory, but I imagine when that comes out, we'll see one of them pull away, or maybe if it's really not as bad of a situation as we thought, maybe Jennings gets back in that race. But I think right now you have to think Brandon Harris is the front runner.
I'd have to say so as well, just, you know, solely based off the arrest. You know, yeah. it's hard to start a guy after he's been arrested, been in the public spotlight. And of course, LSU had with 4 or 5 players arrested within 24 hours. So LSU's programs kind of look like Alabama's earlier this spring with all the guys getting arrested, and that's kind of a theme in the SEC. And the scary part with this Tigers team at quarterback is, you know, you talk with every team, you say, well, here's the two guys duking it out for starting, but there's other guys, you know, to keep an eye on that could impress, and, you know, as in summer practice. LSU doesn't really have one of those guys. They have eight quarterbacks listed on their roster, but really not none of them have really separated and made themselves that, that true number three guy or that guy that could be the dark horse and take over for either Jennings or Harris if they don't pan out. None of those guys have stood out whatsoever. So really it's kind of hard to get a gauge on the quarterback situation, but I'd have to agree and say it is Brandon Harris's job to lose. He had 25 completions on 45 attempts for 452 yards, six touchdowns, and two picks last year. So two interceptions and 45 attempts, that's not the best interception percentage, not the worst, better than Jennings, who had seven interceptions and 227 attempts versus 11 touchdowns. Their passing game was horrible last year. And had LSU had a quarterback last year, they may have been a contender for a playoff bid.
Yeah, they went 8-4 last year with one of the worst quarterback situations in the country. I mean, they could not find a quarterback that could play well at all last year. And, I mean, if they can get semi-consistent quarterback play, maybe even just a guy that's not going to turn the ball over, turbo by Motorola, then I think this team really could be really good this year. They went 8-4 last year, and I think that if you get just a little bit of better quarterback play, I think you could this team could be really good this year.
Only average 162.9 passing yards per game. That is abysmal. Last in the SEC and definitely one of the worst teams in the nation as far as passing offenses go. I think even Arkansas had a better passing yards per game average. And, of course, we know they run the heck out of the ball up there in Fayetteville. We'll be talking about them on Thursday, actually, before we're talking about the Razorbacks. But as far as running the ball down in the bayou, there's no problem whatsoever.
No,
it's the Leonard Fournette show without a doubt. Last year came on. Remember, he flashed the Heisman pose against Sam Houston State, and then that was contested. It was in the public eye. Everybody's saying, well, you know, this guy, he's not a Heisman contender yet. And he was humbled a little bit in the beginning of SEC play. But then he went on and against Florida, which had a great rushing defense last year. Florida definitely wasn't a good team, but they had a fantastic rush defense, a fantastic defense all around. He rushed for 140 yards and two touchdowns on 27 carries versus Florida last year. And then his best for last, he beat Texas A&M and Notre Dame on the ground for a combined 289 yards on 30 carries in the last two games of LSU's season. So Fournette, without a doubt, is the guy. It's hard to pick who the best running back in the SEC is with Fournette, and then you got Nick Chubb. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's just good running back. Obviously, Derrick Henry got to throw in the mix.
Alex Collins, Jonathan Williams are all really good.
Tennessee's back, Jalen Strong.
Jalen
Hurts.
Yeah.
Strong. That's Jalen Strong's the Arizona State wide receiver. Too many names, man. Too many Jalen's.
Yeah.
There's
Jalen Mills.
There's too many Jalen's in the world. Stop naming your kids Jalen. But yes, Leonard Fournette, without a doubt, is the guy in Baton Rouge. And behind him, as far as backup goes, you almost don't need a backup because he is so durable. I mean, you see these 27 carries, 30 carries, but there is a group of guys underneath him, including his little brother.
Yep.
His little brother's a two-star recruit, made the team.
Leonard.
You got Leonard.
Leonard and Leonard Fournette.
You got real creative with the naming process there that Fournette did. I mean, there's a whole host of running backs. You got speedier guys. You got guys like Bennett Shiro. He's only 5'11", 214 pounds. Definitely a change in pace from the big bruiser that is Leonard Fournette at 6'1", 230 pounds. And so there's a couple guys that you expect to get some sort of playing time behind Fournette. Darrell Williams also, he's about the same size as Leonard Fournette. He's expected to slide into the number two spot. So you got two big ground-and-pound guys, and you got a few speedier guys, too, on the outside, which you see in some of the best rushing offenses, you generally have different types of running backs.
Yeah.
You have a balance between running backs. You have a power back and you have a speed back, even up in Arkansas. You know, one guy's better at running on the outside, and one guy's better running between the tackles. But, you know, both can get it done on the ground, and that's what's important in the run game. And then now we get to the receivers. They're hard to judge because they put up lackluster numbers last year. But again, the quarterback situation was dismal in Baton Rouge, and you know it's hard to it's hard to talk about this receiving corps without mentioning Trayvon Durrell. Of course, he was their leading receiver, 758 yards and 7 touchdowns. So he caught over half, just about half of the team's touchdowns last year. He was clearly the receiver's favorite targets. And then Trey Quinn, also a great guy. Malachi Dupree.
Yeah, I think Malachi Dupree is a guy that could have a breakout season. He was a big recruit, played a decent amount as a freshman last year, and then I think he will probably slot into that starting job next to Durrell, and I think he could have a big year if the quarterbacks are decent.
Well, that's the hard part, is getting decent quarterback play.
I don't think they have a problem at the wide receiver position. I think the problem is if the wide receivers can get the ball. That's the big problem.
It's undoubtedly the problem with the LSU offense is at the quarterback spot. Mm-hmm. And you have to hope that having the strong run game of Fournette will help the quarterbacks, because it'll, you know, the guys will stack the box, other defenses will stack the box, making, you know, throwing the ball easier in theory. But for this, you know, quarterback challenge team, you know, it's hard to judge right off the bat. So hopefully, for the receiver's sake, these guys can get stable quarterback play. And if they do, this is going to be a scary offense because, I mean, this is a very, very talented receiver bunch. Definitely, I'd say, probably the most underrated receiving corps in the SEC, just because LSU is not known for their passing game. Anyway, let's move on now to the offensive line. Receivers and running back, not the problem for LSU. No. I wouldn't say offensive line is either. They're returning three starters of the five. Gerald Hawkins is expected to slide up and play at left tackle, replacing Lyle Collins. He's seen action. He was the right tackle last year. Now he's sliding over and playing left. He's kind of the experienced guy on LSU's offensive line, and I don't think there's going to be a huge drop-off in talent there. Obviously, Lyle Collins, just an amazing talent, you know, projected 10-year starter in the NFL. Obviously slipped because he was facing some off-field issues at the time of the NFL draft. Didn't get drafted. The Dallas Cowboys got a steal Lyle Collins.
I mean, he was a top half of the first-round talent, and just slipped because of off-the-field issues.
Some said top five pick, potentially, for Lyle Collins, and Dallas was able to nab him as an undrafted free agent. Huge pickup for the Dallas Cowboys and a huge loss for LSU. And then on the other side, you'll have Vidal Alexander. And between Alexander and Hawkins, there's two tackles that are going to be starting that have seen starting experience in the past that have a combined 50 games of starting experience. So while they may not be starting in that position that they've been in for so long, they're still returning starters, and they're going to help the LSU offensive line without a doubt. And that's going to help the run game. And, you know, you hope you get some stability on the outside to stop that pass rush as well. So maybe we'll see some improvement as far as the quarterback situation goes. It all boils down to the quarterback, everything. Yeah. Everything you can count down to the quarterback. And then at centers, where their biggest problem will be, they're projected to start a freshman at the center position. And, of course, I've said, and I'll echo it again, the most important position on the offensive line is your center. Second most is your left tackle. So stability at left tackle, a young, unheralded freshman at center for the LSU Tigers. It'll be interesting to see how their offensive line pans out. I'm not going to say it's one of the best in the conference, but it's definitely not the worst. It's a solid unit that will, without a doubt, get the LSU Tigers offense up and running with Leonard Fournette in the backfield.
And I think two of the keys is that you have those two tackles that are turning and they're experienced. So that'll help in the passing game, where I think you won't have as much pressure off the edge because those guys are experienced. They've played in the SEC before. So I think that helps the quarterbacks a little bit. But the inexperience in the middle might hurt their running game just a little bit.
It might, but then again, Leonard Fournette is bigger than half the guards on the team anyway, and so, you know, he should be able to just bulldoze right through guys.
But Leonard on the offensive line.
Leonard a fullback, yeah, but, you know, LSU is one of those teams as well that always seems to potentially, you know, put out potential first and second round picks on the offensive line. So those guys that are going to slide in at the center and guard spot, without a doubt, will be well coached. And it's hard to say there'll be a huge talent drop off just because of how consistent their offensive line seemingly always is. And then also, we didn't mention, but Ethan Pochick is another returning starter. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that they've been trying out at center, but he has been playing guard in the past as well. So right now he's kind of penciled in as the starting left guard, with Will Clapp being the penciled in at center.
One thing about Pochick, I don't know. I've never played on the offensive line. I played football for a little bit. He's 6'7". Is that kind of – that's a big – that seems big for a center, especially for a quarterback over the middle when you're trying to look over him. 6'7", and Anthony Jennings is their biggest quarterback at 6'2". It seems kind of – at 6'7", it seems kind of tall for a center. Is that some?
Generally, your centers are – you're shorter. Kind of, yeah. The center is kind of the shortest guy on the offensive line.
That,
your guards are next, and your tackles are generally your longest and tallest. That's not always the case. You can have a guard that plays at 6'6", 6'7", and same thing with center. The whole, you know, quarterback can't see over you. If your center's standing straight up, then you have bigger problems to worry about than getting the ball out over his head. Before we head to break, real quick, a score update for the United States versus Germany game. 0-0 in the 31st minute in the Women's World Cup. We're going to have to break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about the LSU defense. New defensive coordinator in the Bayou, Kevin Steele, former Alabama guy, now leading the charge in Baton Rouge. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Student Section right here on 90.7 The Capstone.
I'm Mitch Gaspard, head baseball coach here at the University of Alabama. You're listening to the Student Section, 90.7.
Hello, Carb teenagers. If you don't mind, I'm only going to broadcast this out of the speaker on the passenger side so we can talk in private.
Okay, now that we're alone, what's with your friend's driving? Is he always this reckless? You should say something, something witty. Make a joke about the airbag or something. Hearses are funny, too. You could make a joke about hearses.
Driver, just so you know, we're totally not talking about you.
He suspects nothing.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and SpeakUpOrElse.com.
This is an important message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Apply first aid to treat cuts and scrapes and prevent infection. To care for a bleeding cut, put pressure on it until the bleeding has stopped. Clean the wound by gently pouring clean tap or bottled water over it. Next, apply a clean, dry bandage. If you think the cut is infected, get medical help as soon as possible. To learn more, call CDC at 1-800-CDC-INFO.
For all the latest updates and breaking news surrounding the University of Alabama and SEC athletics, follow WVUAFM Sports on Twitter at @Capstone_sports. Just go to twitter.com/Capstone_sports and hit the follow button.
Session here, 90.7 The Capstone. Before we talk about this LSU defense, I was just informed that we have a caller on the line, Johnny from Boston. I can't wait to find out who this guy is.
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Johnny, I'm doing all right. How are you doing, bud?
I haven't heard country music in months. I was just getting used to it.
Yeah, Johnny, I'm producing. I don't know what's going on.
What's that, Johnny?
Your LSU talking, you know, you keep talking about the quarterback segment earlier, tried to slide on then, you know, the whole debate, Anthony Jennings, Brandon Harris. Here's a name for you. Former Purdue quarterback Danny Etling transferring to LSU, 24/7 Sports reported it. That's my hot take. He's a bit of a gunslinger. The comparison is Brett Favre of most. He throws a lot of interceptions. He's got one hell of an arm. And that's my hot take of the summer thus far. I think Danny Etling is going to be the quarterback for our LSU. They're going a little north of the border, getting a kid from Indiana, played high school at Terrence View High School in Indiana, one of the big powerhouses in the Big Ten area, Purdue guy, and I think Les Miles made a good decision going to grab him. I think he's going to be a formidable force for the Alabama Crimson Tide this season.
Well, I still think it's hard to go out and say that, you know, this guy's going to come in and change the quarterback situation at LSU. I still think you have to give the returning guys a shot, but then again, when you have returners like Jennings and Harris that underperformed last year, it's hard to, you know, discount that opportunity, but Johnny, we thank you for your hot take, man.
Anytime. You guys enjoy yourselves, and if you want to know anything about the LSU quarterback situation, just flip on the offer tape this year. They got to get a new guy. Roll Tide.
Well, Johnny, before you leave, I got another question for you. I don't know if you heard the first segment. We talked about the trade between the San Jose Sharks and the Boston Bruins earlier today with the goaltender Martin going over to San Jose. What's your take on that?
It's the only good move the new general manager in Boston, Don Sweeney, has made in his new tenure as general manager. He crippled the Boston hockey team in the fluffy last couple days, trading away fan favorite Mion Lucic. Dougie Hamilton was the poor decision. The first decision he made that was right today was flipping this Martin Jones guy for another first-round pick. So in theory, you trade Mion Lucic for two first-rounders and two prospects, which is way better than you could have got him on the market maybe 2-3 months ago during the end of the season.
All right, Johnny, thank you for your hot take, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide, Johnny. Back to this LSU defense. Not as much to talk about defensively as there was on the offensive side of the ball. LSU boasted a very, very good defense last year, and that's what kept them in games. That's the whole reason why they won 8 games last year, was the strength of the defense down in Baton Rouge. The mantra is DBU at LSU, and there's never really a drop-off in defensive back talent, and this year, no different. Let's talk about the DBs first, and then we'll move into the front seven. Tre'Davious White, there's a name for you. He had only 2 interceptions last year, but that did lead the team, and let's not let these low interception numbers discount how talented this secondary is. So good. So many good players across the board. And then another Jalen at free safety, Jalen Mills. He's the senior. First round pick next year, you say? Water
repellent. He could be. He's definitely going to be a high pick next year. He's only on really good. He's going to anchor down that secondary. Now for the final win. You lose Jalen Collins from last year, who was a first round pick and cornerback. So win. Jalen Mills needs to anchor down that secondary. And Verizon. I mean, I think that he could really make this secondary one of the best in the SEC.
I think so, without a doubt. I mean, just so much talent on this LSU backfield. DBU, are they the real DBU or is Florida?
I mean, I think it has to be LSU. Jalen Collins. Limited edition metallic droid turbo
by Motor. Jalen Mills.
No, Jalen Collins drafted last year. Tyrann Mathieu, Eric Reed, all those guys, first-round picks or first-round talent in Tyrann Mathieu's case. But I think right now it's DBU.
I'm giving DBU to LSU as well. Yeah. Florida's put out some good secondary guys, without a doubt.
Yeah, they have.
But LSU just consistently, they always seem to have, if nothing else, and Alabama always puts out first-round picks, LSU will always have at least one first-round pick, and it's almost always a defensive back, whether it's a safety or a corner or both. You know, it's unreal how good this defensive backfield is. And another question before we move on, do you feel that the defensive backs are going to take a step back with Kevin Steele there as opposed to Chavis, or do you think it's going to stay the same? Do you think as far as the defensive coaching goes, you think the coordinator isn't going to make as big a difference?
I think for the guys, they have a pretty experienced secondary this year. I think there won't be as big of a step back this year as you'll see in future years with these new guys coming in. I don't think they'll get the same I don't think the coaching will be as good with those guys, so you'll might see a step back in future years. But this year, these guys are experienced. They know what John Chavis has taught them, and I think they'll still be able to do that same stuff, perform just the same, if not better, this year, even though their defensive coordinator is gone.
Let's talk now about the linebackers at LSU. Before we get into actual individual players, it's worth noting that Chavis ran a 4-3 defense at LSU for years. Kevin Steele was on staff at Alabama here, and Alabama's base defense is 3-4, and they both kept quiet, Les Miles and Kevin Steele. They both kept quiet on whether or not they're going to change up their defensive scheme or mix and match. My theory is that they're going to kind of slowly incorporate the 3-4. They're going to experience with it a little bit and bring on 3-4 packages. I think this year they're going to stay in a base 4-3 because that's the kind of guys they have in their system.
Yeah, I mean,
give Coach Steele and Coach Miles a year to recruit to the 3-4 defense before they make the full switch. But how big of an impact is this going to have on their linebackers? Because the difference between a 4-3 outside linebacker and a 3-4 outside linebacker is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, in a 4-3, your outside linebacker's got to be a good coverage guy. He's got to be quick. He's got to be good hands, just, you know, respond well in coverage, almost like a bigger free safety. And in a 3-4, he needs to be even bigger and be more of a, you know, a defensive end in a sense, a stand-up defensive end. So, I mean, do you see that being a problem with this linebacking core?
I honestly think it could help right now because the guys they have on their defense – they're trained for the 4-3 right now. So if you run some more 3-4 and incorporate more 3-4, I think your middle linebackers, it'll help with their coverage. So it
you've heard of a win-win,
I think,
right? What about a win-win?
I think their coverage knowledge and their skills and coverage of linebackers
water repellent
from the 4-3 could actually help in the 3-4 because you have those guys that know how to cover, so if they need to cover, they can do that rather than having a bunch of big guys that are used to 3-4 and can't cover.
And get 10 gigs of data.
I can definitely see the argument there. And without a doubt, this LSU linebacking core is going to be anchored by Kendall Beckwith. We saw him, true freshman last year, inserted in the lineup against Florida and rejuvenated that LSU defense. He is outstanding. I hope he stays. Part of me hopes he stays in all 4 years of his career just so we can keep seeing this kid play. Yeah. Another half of me says I don't want to see him having to tackle Alabama. Right? He may be the only backer that could have no problem tackling a guy like Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
He is scary good. Then also, he's huge. He's a big guy and just a smart linebacker, you know, beyond his years. Again, only a true freshman last year and anchored that LSU defense. And then also the other guys, he has two seniors alongside him expected to start at the outside linebacker spot, Lamar Lewis and Deion Jones. Those guys are expected to be your linebacking core for the Bayou Bengals next year. Now let's move to the defensive line, probably the one of the weaker spots on the defense last year, but still a good unit, especially right up the middle with Christian LeCouture and Devon Godjoe. Yeah, these Cajun names are just killing me.
Great Cajun names there.
I've been practicing these Cajun names all day. I'm like, how am I going to pronounce this? Real Cajun down there in Baton Rouge. But those guys were outstanding up the middle and just really, really solid run defense. The main problems they had last year on the defensive line was getting a good pass rush from the defensive end spot. Only had 19 sacks last year. Seven of those came against Sam Houston State, of course, one of their weakest opponents last year. So, you know, kind of hard to say that those 19 sacks is a true stat. Really, only 12 of those came against more formidable opponents. It's going to be interesting to see how this defensive line goes because they rotated so many guys in and out. And again, it goes back to whether or not Kevin Steele puts in a 3-4 or they stick with the 4-3, the production of the defensive end. It all goes back to that. It's too hard to say at this point, again, because we saw so many guys last year, so many young guys rotate in and out. Out at defensive end spot, and you know, when you're looking at their incoming recruits, I mean, is there any defensive linemen that really stand out?
There's a couple 4-star defensive ends, Arden Key from Atlanta, Georgia, 6'6", 228. He's a weak side defensive end. And then Isaiah Washington from New Orleans, 6'4", 245. Both 4-stars, according to Rivals. And both could help the pass rush, but I think you could see maybe LSU, they have a couple of guys, Tashawn Bauer, he's 6'5", 237. A couple of guys who are smaller, including some of their recruits coming in. So maybe some more 3-4 defense with those three-man fronts they could play. Look at Chore, Good Joe, and they also have Marquidius Bain, who's 6'4", 299. So those guys can play those defensive end positions on the 3-4, and then you could maybe put some of those smaller guys at outside blitzing linebacker, and maybe that could help your pass rush a little bit because those guys might be a little too small to play on a four-man front all the time.
Well, it should be fun to watch this LSU defense and see what kind of surprises they may throw out there. Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you have a guy – taking over a 4-3 defense, that's a 3-4 DC, and then you have a head coach as tricky as Les Miles. He's always got a trick up his sleeve, so it should be interesting to see what kind of packages they play, and we might even see an instance where they go, you know, certain packages against certain teams, you know, a pass-heavy team like Texas A&M, they may go to a 3-4 to get that pass rush. It'll be totally interesting to see, and it's going to be fun to watch them play.
A lot of their big games, their last four games, are all really tough SEC games. I would not be surprised if you see them start with a 4-3 at the beginning of the season, then kind of phase into 3-4 over the season, maybe play a little bit, and then maybe against those four really tough teams.
You've heard of a win-win,
maybe
right?
See a lot more.
What about a win-win?
Surprise those
pick
teams
up the limited edition metallic droid
and
turbo
help out their
Motorola
defense. I wouldn't be surprised
up to 48
if you see that.
Well, no doubt in my mind, we'll see both a 4-3 and a 3-4 defense from LSU this year. That's your Tigers defense. When we come back from break, we're going to talk about the Tigers schedule, go game by game, and give you our final prediction for their 2015 season. Don't go anywhere.
On a college tour. It shows them that there's a whole world beyond their own. But what's even better is that most of these kids decide college is for them. My name is Nnamdi Asamoah. I don't just live it.
Find out how you can live United for Education. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Go to liveunited.org.
You've
brought
heard
to you by United Way,
right?
And the Ad Council.
What about a win-win-win? Pick up the
You're listening to the best sports staff in the country, right here on 90.7 The Capstone.
That's your first one. Plus, it's only on Verizon. There's your next one. Now for the final. Get
Welcome back into the student section here at 90.7 The Capstone. Our last couple minutes together, we're going to go through this LSU schedule, a very tough schedule, as every year it is in the SEC, particularly in the SEC West. So let's start at the top. They get a break at the beginning, as every SEC team does. They play McNeese State, the Cowboys.
Not Alabama.
The Cowboys. They're playing on September 5th, and then they start SEC play right off the bat with Mississippi State. Then they play Auburn at home, and then they travel to Syracuse. That's an interesting out-of-conference. Not necessarily a tough game. Syracuse not known for their football program.
Is that a basketball game?
Yeah, right. Is it basketball? Then they get Eastern Michigan at home. They travel to South Carolina, get the Gators at home, get the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers at home. They travel to Bryant-Denny right here on November 7th. They play the Arkansas Razorbacks at home. They get Ole Miss on the road and then Texas A&M to close out the season at Tiger Stadium, Death Valley. Tough place to play, I tell you. What do you got? What do you got this Tiger team finishing?
I have them finishing 10-2 with their two losses.
Without a quarterback, and they're 10-2, huh? That's how good this defense is, huh?
That defense is very good. I think the quarterback plays a little bit better this year. I think it's more turns into more of a game manager. If they can limit the turnovers, this running game is going to be really good as always. And some of their matchups, I think Mississippi State, we talked about it last week, early on in the season, I think they'll be able to run on that defense that doesn't have that many returning starters up front. Auburn, I don't believe Auburn will be able to stop the run very much this year, so I'm just basing that off there. And I think this defense will be good enough to stop that Auburn offense. Going down the schedule,
South Carolina. Sorry to interrupt. You have LSU beating Auburn?
I have LSU beating Auburn, beating Mississippi State. Going down the schedule, they're going to beat Syracuse. They're going to beat Eastern Michigan, obviously. I think they'll beat South Carolina. I don't have much faith in South Carolina this year, as I don't think many people do. I also have them beating Florida. We talked about it earlier this summer. Florida is on the rise, but it's not their year. They will beat Western Kentucky as well. And then, so going into the Alabama game, I have LSU at 8-0. They have a bye before Alabama. I think Alabama beats them in Bryant-Denny Stadium. I think Alabama just has too much to offer. Their front seven will be able to slow down LSU's run game enough that their quarterback will have to win them that game. And I think that's where their quarterback play hurts them, is when they have to. Their quarterback has to win a game for them. I don't think they will be able to do that, so I have them losing to Alabama. Beating Arkansas, that one was a t- toss-up. I think that's going to be a really low-scoring game because both these offenses, I don't think, will have much of a passing game. I don't have much faith in Brandon Allen. I don't have much faith in whoever's going to be playing for LSU. So I think that's going to be a low-scoring game, a lot of running the ball. But I think LSU will win that game in Tiger Stadium. And then their second loss of the season comes at Ole Miss. I wasn't here when when you guys talked about Ole Miss, but Ole Miss is a really good team. If they can figure out that quarterback situation.
Well, it's not so much figuring out the situation in Ole Miss. It's more keeping the quarterback out of trouble off
exactly.
the field.
But. So I think Ole Miss will just have too much talent there to win that game. And at Ole Miss, I think Ole Miss wins that game. And then Texas A&M comes into Tiger Stadium and I think loses that game as well.
So you think,
Texas A&M loses that game, what about LSU wins that game. So I have them finishing 10-2.
I have LSU at 9-3. I agree with you. That defense is going to carry them to 9 wins this season. I think that offense with Fournette being having a year under his belt is just one win better than last year. I have them winning their first two versus McNeese State and Mississippi State. I have them losing to Auburn, actually. Last year, Auburn absolutely thumped them. And again, this isn't last year. It's a new team, new year. But I still think Auburn's going to find a way to squeak out a win in Death Valley. I think they're going to win on the road.
It's not a night game either. That's a 2:30.
Is it 2:30 start?
2:30 game. They already announced that. So
yeah, Auburn's got the advantage there. It's interesting. I have them going undefeated in October, beating Eastern Michigan, beating South Carolina on the road, beating the Gators, and beating Western Kentucky at home. And in November, I have them coming to Bryant-Denny, getting their second loss of the year at Alabama. I think Alabama could have the best front seven it's seen in years. This could be the best front seven Coach Saban has had, and he's had some pretty damn good front sevens. This front seven is hellacious, to say the least. And I have them losing that game. Then I have them losing to Arkansas. That's embarrassing. Arkansas. I have them losing to Arkansas. I'm very high in the Razorbacks. I'm looking forward to talking about them. Our next show Thursday. Me, Jeremiah, and Taylor will be talking about the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Don't have the faith in Brandon Allen.
And see, I do. I have more faith in Brandon Allen than I do in half the SEC quarterbacks. I think he reminds me a lot of Alex Smith. Maybe it's after my years of watching Alex Smith in the NFL. NFL Alex Smith, not college Alex Smith. Big difference between those two in college. As far as he's not going to lose you a game, guys like Brandon Harris and Anthony Jennings, they're going to lose you games. Those kind of quarterbacks are. Brandon Allen's not that kind of quarterback. He's not going to win you a game. He's not going to have that 500-yard passing game that's going to win the game for you. But he's not going to lose the game. He's not going to throw. He's not going to throw 4 or 5 interceptions a game. I have faith in Brandon Allen and that Arkansas offense and Arkansas's defense. I'm very high on the Razorbacks this year. So I have them losing to Arkansas and I have them getting the last two wins versus Ole Miss and versus Texas A&M. Despite how good that Ole Miss team is, they always seem to find a way to lose late in the season.
Yeah,
and we talked about how talented they were. I believe Jeremiah was in that day. We talked about Ole Miss with Jeremiah. The more I talk about Ole Miss, the scarier they're looking, particularly with their receiving core. And it's kind of the same situation you mentioned with their quarterback issues going on. Chad Kelly just can't really stay out.
He can
out
stay
of
on the field.
Exactly.
They'll be fine.
He threw something, I believe it was 42 touchdowns to 7 interceptions in 2 seasons in junior college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an incredible ratio.
Those are better numbers than Cam Newton put up in junior college.
Yes. And this guy is just a pure pocket passer.
Yeah.
And we saw what Hugh Freeze, and this is going to sound iffy at first, we saw what Hugh Freeze is able to do with Bo Wallace. Because Bo Wallace was a great quarterback when he was not being Bad Bo.
Yeah.
Bo
was good.
Good Bo was very good. Bad Bo was very bad, unfortunately. Yeah. But it's fair to say that when Bo Wallace was on, he was great. And I think a lot of that has to do with Hugh Freeze. I think he's a great mentor. He's a very good offensive mind. And if Kelly ends up getting that starting job, stays out of trouble, they have some targets to throw to in that receiving core. Laquon Treadwell obviously coming back, and then not to mention not just the receivers, but Evan Engram,
arguably the best tight end.
We've kind of not been able to see what O.J. Howard's been able to do because he just hasn't run the ball much. Evan Engram is ridiculous.
He's got about the same measurables as O.J.
Big guys, big targets, and scary quick. And it's actually funny to mention O.J. Howard on the day we're talking about LSU because a few years ago, O.J. Howard had that run where it looked like he's about to be tracked down by some defensive backs, and he just whoop right on by it up the sideline for a touchdown against the LSU Tigers. That was 2 years ago here in Bryant-Denny Stadium. So, Ole Miss is going to be a very good team, but this LSU defense plays into their strengths as far as passing the ball. It's going to be a great battle between a great receiving core and a great defensive secondary. So I have them winning that game, and I also have them winning the Texas A&M game. Texas A&M is a team that I think is going to tucker out towards the end of the year. I think they're going to be better than most people think because I think Chavis is going to make an impact right away on their defense. I think they're going to have a much better secondary than they had in the previous years. So I have Texas A&M being a very good team. But, again, I think LSU is just going to be a little bit better. And, again, that game also at home for the LSU Tigers. And that's going to be a key.
Thing. Most of their really hard games this year are at home, with the exception of Alabama and Ole Miss and Mississippi State. But
you've heard of a win,
I still
right?
think what about late on the season,
pick up the limited edition metallic
key that LSU's at home and
water repellent.
They play just about as good license. As anybody.
That's your first
can
win.
At
Plus,
Tigers.
It's only on Verizon.
We have a little bit of time left. So I want to have your next win. That's a fun now question for here for you.
Get $250.
Leonard Fournette, how many yards does he rush for? Just strictly rushing. Not talking all purpose here.
The win.
Do you think it's north of 1700?
I think he falls between only on Verizon. 15 and 1700.
Between 1500 and 1700.
I don't think he tops at 1700, but I think he gets somewhere between 15 and 1700.
Okay, and who's going to be better between him and Nick Chubb?
That's tough. I think
you've heard of
I
a
think
win-win,
Leonard
right?
Fournette will
what about a win-win
have
win-win?
Bigger numbers
pick up
just
the limited
because
edition metallic droid
Nick
turbo
Chubb
water
has other competition. We talked about Leonard Fournette. They don't really have other guys that could be stars on other teams, but Georgia has Sony Michel. Name's slipping me right now.
Georgia's running back.
Keith Marshall could, if he comes back from his injuries, he could be a superstar on any other team. Georgia has other guys that could be really good on other teams, and I don't see that kind of competition at LSU.
All right. Would you I'm going to give you the four – I'm going to give you my four top running backs, and there's just a lot of good running backs in the SEC. Yeah. My four, I've got to go with Fournette, Chubb, then Hurd, and then Derrick Henry. Yeah. Do you have any exceptions to that, and who do you think is going to be the best out of those four?
I don't have exceptions to that. I probably have Chubb and Fournette as 1A, 1B, and then Derrick Henry as 3, Hurd as 4. I don't think Derrick Henry's he's got the size of Fournette, but I don't think he has all the other assets that he has. I think he is more of a one-dimensional
runner. You've heard of a win-win, right? What about a win-win-win? Pick up the limited
edition. All right, well, that's going to do it for us here. Before we wrap it up completely, just want to give you a score update of the Women's World Cup. It is 0-0 at the half.
There's your next win.
Now for the United States Women's National Team taking on the German Women's National Team. Go USA. We thank you for listening. For Eric Evenson, Marquise Munson, I'm Zach Tigert. Good evening and Roll Tide.
Save without settling. Only on Verizon.